You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
On this Tuesday, December 5th, we're talking Cubs baseball today with Kerry Muscat, our Cubs reporter for MLB.com. Kerry, we thank you for the time, and the biggest news item is a positive one for the Cubs, as they tend to be. Shohei Ohtani has been the man in the news lately, first and foremost, more than anyone else, as he has officially been posted. He has narrowed his list to seven teams of where he'd like to end up in 2018, and to a lot of people's surprise, based on geography, the Cubs are on that list because the other six teams all play in either the NL or AL West. The Cubs clearly do not, so they still have a shot at this, Kerry. And when you kind of look back, and you know, people are trying to figure out, you know, why the Cubs and not, you know, another team. What are your feelings on this? You know, why are the Cubs still in this thing when he's made it pretty clear that he does prefer to be on the West Coast?
Well, I can't speak for Ohtani, but what I'm thinking is that there might be just the Wrigley Field mystique. Mm-hmm. And the Cubs' mystique might have something to do with it. It also could be that Ohtani also got a little sneak peek at the Cubs' facilities in spring training this year in Mesa. According to a story I found in the Kyoto News, he had been there. Apparently his Nippon Ham Fighters team trains in Peoria, Arizona every year. They kind of get their spring training started there. And he had gone to the Cubs facility to get some treatment. I think he was dealing with an ankle injury or some kind of injury, but he'd gone to the Cubs to get treatment. So he knows what their facility looks like, and it's fairly state of the art. It opened in 2014, I think. And it could be that if you consider all the teams, the seven teams, they all train in Arizona. So obviously that is a draw to him. He doesn't want to go to Florida. And it could just be that the Cubs do need starting pitching, so there's an opening if he's interested in there. I'm always curious if he's been in contact with some of the other Japanese players that played for the Cubs. It could be that there's just been some gossip. You know, they've talked to each other. It could be that he's intrigued by playing for Joe Madden, who obviously is known for some of his innovations, mm-hmm. and could be kind of a perfect match.
Yeah, it really could. And Joe Madden has gone on the record in saying how intrigued he is by having a guy with Ohtani's background and skill set at his disposal. And, you know, like you said, he's one of the more innovative, outside-the-box thinking managers in baseball. So, Kerry, kind of elaborate on Madden's comments about, you know, just how intrigued he is at the prospect of having Shohei Ohtani on his roster.
Well, Madden has told us before, actually, since Ohtani's name came up, you know, and the fact that he was coming to the major leagues, you know, Madden has told us a story about a minor leaguer in the Angels system back in 1992, a guy by the name of Deshaun Warren. Apparently, Warren was a left-handed pitcher, but he also was really fast. So Madden wanted to see if he could somehow have this guy, have Warren pitch, but also use him in the outfield to take advantage of his speed on the days that he wasn't pitching. So as Joe has said, he's always been kind of intrigued by the concept of having, you know, a two-way player. And if you flash back, since he's been with the Cubs, he has not been afraid to put pitchers in the outfield. Travis Wood most famously made a great catch up against the Wrigley Field wall.
Right.
And you know, he's, so it might just be that it's something that I'm sure Joe would love to tinker with, and we'll just have to see what happens.
Yeah, maybe the Cubs end up winning the sweepstakes, as you know, like you elaborated, they're still on the list, to many people's surprise, given his preference to be with the West Coast team, but certainly do not count the Cubs out. And Kerry, to kind of wrap up the Ohtani discussion, I want to get your take on just your opinion of Ohtani and his talent and his skill set. You hear varying opinions about how it's going to translate to the major leagues. You hear about the triple-digit fastball. You hear about the power from the left side of the plate. Are you buying 100% into the Ohtani hype, or do you think that it's maybe a tad overblown at this point?
You know, I don't know. I have not seen him. I have not talked to scouts really that much. I couldn't gauge, but I do know that there certainly seems to be a lot of hype. And if you have someone who's, 23 years old and has the skill sets that he obviously has, it'll just be intriguing to see how it translates when he comes over here to the major leagues.
Yeah, it certainly will. Whatever team gets him, you know, how they deploy him, as a pitcher, as a hitter, how often does he, does he ever sit? Does he, would he land better with an AL team with a DH option? A lot of things to sort out, and we'll see if the Cubs, if he narrows the list even further, if they make this second cut, so to speak. Kerry, shifting gears here, the Cubs deciding to not tender a contract to Hector Rondon, their former closer, as he is now officially a free agent, and Rondon, of course, held down the closer's role in the world title season of 2016. That was before a guy named Aroldis Chapman was acquired at the deadline, and Rondon had to take a back seat to him. Looking back, Kerry, was he ever the same pitcher after Chapman was acquired? It just seemed like, he had a few more ups and downs and hiccups than he had before Aroldis arrived.
He wasn't having that great a year in 2016, and he wasn't the kind of dominating closer like a Chapman or a Kenley Jansen is. He wasn't the kind of guy, or Trevor Hoffman in his day, the kind of guy that Mariano Rivera, when they come into the game, boom, it's over. You just had that feeling. There was always Rondon just wasn't as consistent in terms of his pitches. To his credit, though, I think what people, hopefully Cubs fans, remember is that this guy went from a Rule 5 draft pick. He was the Cubs' Rule 5 pick and went from that to their closer for 14-15 and most of 16. And handled, when Chapman arrived and then this year, with Wade Davis arriving, he handled the transition and being kind of delegated to setup guy just as professionally and smoothly as anybody could. Handled himself well. I give him credit for that. This is a guy who was the Indians a long time ago, was their Indians minor league pitcher of the year, and then had injuries. So he really accomplished a lot. It just was always hard for him to kind of get back on track. And if he had a couple of bad outings, it took a little bit for him to get back on track. And I think that might have contributed to some of the lack of success.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard for any professional athlete with any shred of pride, as these guys all have, to be told not once but twice that, we got a guy in here that's a little bit better than you. First it was Chapman, and then it was Wade Davis. But as you said, he handled things with the utmost professionalism. And, tough to see him move on, but hopefully he will land somewhere and be an asset to whatever team he plays for in 2018. Kerry, to wrap up here, what we're doing this week is looking back at winter meetings past, some wheelings and dealings that go on kind of behind the scenes, with the winter meetings getting underway in earnest this coming Sunday. So, Kerry, take us back to 2006 and the Cubs coming to an agreement with Ted Lilly in the most unusual of circumstances. Elaborate on that, if you could, for us.
Well, Jim Hendry was the general manager at the time, and had been kind of popping antacids, thinking that he had a little indigestion or something, wasn't feeling well. Lou Piniella was the manager. Someone else in the front office finally convinced Hendry to go to the hospital to get checked. And it turned out that he was having a heart attack. Yeah. But that didn't, of course, stop Hendry. As he's on a gurney, about to undergo the EKG, he's talking on his cell phone to Ted Lilly's agent and finalizing a four-year, $40 million deal. Of course, the agent did not know that Hendry was on the gurney and hooked up to this machine. And Hendry said to this day he can't figure out why he had the phone in his hand, but he was not stopping. So they once after the EKG was done, Piniella took the phone from Hendry, told the agent what was going on. Hendry, of course, not to be outdone, called Lilly while he was still on the gurney to kind of confirm the deal was set, and didn't give him a heads up. And Lilly found out later, but it was, which is something they can all laugh about now. After they finalized that, Hendry was put in an ambulance to be taken to a hospital 30 miles away to undergo an angioplasty, which saved his life. The guy now is, Hendry's now 62. He's a special assistant with the Yankees, and he's very thankful. And he was joking, the doctor, and I'm not going to try and pronounce the doctor's name, but the doctor has told Hendry to call him Dr. J. And, of course, Hendry told him, you better play like him. But the doctor saved his life. He was a cardiologist and a specialist there. And it's just a funny. I remember when it happened, I was covering the Cubs, and I remember we were all nervous because we knew that Jim didn't exactly take great care of himself and was a little overweight. So the fact that he was having a heart issue was kind of not a surprise. But as Hendry was in the ambulance on his way to this hospital, he said he's on the phone calling Cubs staffers, you know, I want you to do this in the Rule 5 draft. I want you to do this. I want you to do this. And finally the paramedic said, hey, buddy, you know, you might want to call your family because you don't know what's going to happen with this procedure here. And so I think that was a little bit of a wake-up call. And he survived and is feeling great and, you know, couldn't be more thankful. And to top it off, he's hoping to hook up with the doctor. Says he sends him a couple bottles of wine every once in a while and is hoping to hook up with him when that he's back in Orlando next week.
Amazing story. And Carrie, I'm guessing that when his family, you know, got word of this about what he was doing as he's literally trying to fight for his life, I'm guessing this didn't go over too well.
Well, he called his kids who were 10 and 8 years old at the time. And the kids, of course, they were supposed to come down to Orlando on the Friday after the meetings, and they were going to spend the time at Disney. And, of course, his daughter, Lauren, her concern was whether or not they were still going to get to go to Disney, so which I think is a good attitude.
Sure.
But he wanted to just make sure that he called them so they didn't see something on TV about their dad, you know, before they heard it from their dad. So I think that was they handled it pretty well.
Yeah, it all worked out for the best, thankfully, fortunately. And Ted Lilly has one hell of a story to tell to his kids and grandkids.
Yes,
about
he does.
Yeah, absolutely, when he signed on with the Cubs back in 2006. Carrie Muscat, great stuff as always. We'll do it again next week. In the meantime, Matt Wehmeyer signing off for MLB.com Extras Chicago Cubs.